This Week in America with Rick Bratton. Issues that matter to you. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
The Medal of Honor is the nation's highest award for valor, bestowed on fewer than 3,600 Americans since President Abraham Lincoln signed it into law in 1861. The Netflix original docuseries Medal of Honor highlights the lives and experiences of these courageous men who went above and beyond the call of duty. 8 recipients are featured, a diverse group including 3 living veterans. Among those featured are guests on today's This Week in America, Medal of Honor recipient Staff Sergeant Clint Romachet, recognized for spearheading the defense of Command Outpost Keating in Afghanistan and the counterattack against the Taliban in a 14-hour firefight. A true American hero, Sergeant Clint Romachet, next on This Week in America.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Want to fly somewhere? Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Then call. That's right. Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. Low-cost airlines has all kinds of cheap travel deals. Fly domestically and save up to 75%. You can even fly internationally and save even more. Yes, fly anywhere in the world and save a lot of money on your plane tickets. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. So don't book your tickets until you call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. Call right now for prices so low they can't be published. Travel experts are here 24/7 to help.
Call 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS? Newsflash, the president has changed the tax laws, and now you may be able to pay the IRS less. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, the tax doctor can help you pay the IRS as little as possible allowed by law. There are new tax laws for business owners, the self-employed, even W-2 workers. If you have a back tax problem or a few years of unfilled returns, new help to save you money is now here. Call right now to see how the new tax laws can help you. Plus, right now we'll waive the consultation fee and give you a free tax savings report. Attention business owners, the self-employed, and W-2 workers. Make this free call to the tax doctor now and learn how to take advantage of the new tax laws that may help you pay the IRS less.
800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. That's 800-659-5731.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to coast, This Week in America, online at thisweekinamerica.us. Netflix gripping, intimate, original docuseries, Medal of Honor, celebrates 8 recipients of the military's highest award for valor. The award has been bestowed upon fewer than 3,600 Americans since President Abraham Lincoln signed it into law in 1861. Using archival footage and commentary from historians and military leaders, the series highlights the lives and experiences of these courageous men who went above and beyond the call of duty. Medal of Honor features a diverse group of recipients, including 3 living veterans. Among those profiled, Medal of Honor recipient and native of Lake City, California, Staff Sergeant Clint Romachet, raised in a family with a deep military tradition. He enlisted in the Army in 1999, saw combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's the author of the bestseller, Red Platoon, a true story of American valor, a riveting firsthand account of the Battle of Keating, told by Sergeant Romachet, who spearheaded both the defense of the outpost and the counterattack that drove the Taliban back beyond the wire, considered one of the best combat narratives written in recent decades. He received the Medal of Honor for his actions. Our guest on today's This Week in America, Staff Sergeant Clint Romachet, profiled in the Netflix original docuseries Medal of Honor, now available for on-demand viewing. Clint, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
No, thank you very much for having me.
You know, the Netflix series celebrates 8 recipients of the Medal of Honor. You were among the first to see the finished product. What were your impressions, your thoughts, when you saw the finished series?
You know, what really I took away from it, and I think they've nailed it just completely, is they take stories of recipients starting from World War II up to current conflicts. And they're looking at it, and they kind of portray it that it's not this action flick. It doesn't just, you know, solely gravitate around the narrative of what you did that day to receive it. But it navigates around the narrative of, you know, each one of these recipients came from a different background in life, you know, grew up different locations all around the country.
Yes.
And it kind of ties it back in to show that the motivation of this great country comes from all walks of life, and it comes together, and the motivation to do what they did that day is a motivation of love and not hate. That's what got them to go above and beyond was because of their brothers and sisters to their left and right, because of what they knew the situation was that they gave up and quit fighting, what it would do to others, and because of the love of their country and their families back home.
Before we talk about what happened that day, October 3, in 2009, at Combat Outpost Keating, let's talk about that. Your background came from a tradition of military going back to what your grandfather, back in 1943, what I understand, he entered the draft portraying his brother to actually go in and participate in the war.
Yeah, he was taking his brother's spot at the time because his brother was the only male in the family of legal age to do stuff on the ranch. So granddad took his spot, ended up going and surviving Normandy Beach, the Battle of the Bulge. My father ended up serving. I did two tours in Vietnam. Both my older brothers ended up serving. And it was always growing up, it wasn't like a prerequisite for the Romesha boys to serve, but it was always encouraged. But it did come to the point where when I initially wanted to enlist, I was 17 years old, just out of high school. I asked my dad if he'd sign the paper, since I wasn't of legal age to do it myself. And at the time, my dad had given me some fatherly advice that I couldn't comprehend it. And he basically said, you know, we're not currently at war right now, and maybe not tomorrow, and maybe not in 20 years, but there can come a time where you'll be asked to go and do and see things that no person should ever have to do. And I'm not going to sign for you. You are going to have to make that choice on your own and that commitment. And of course, we fast forward in time, my first combat deployment, that really kind of put it in perspective what he was talking about there. And it comes back to that sense of service wasn't because of what the politicians were squabbling about or what our military leaders were trying to direct us to do. It came back to fighting for those guys to your left and right, defending your home, defending your brothers, defending your families, and that motivation of camaraderie, the spirit of Corps, and just love for each other was more powerful than anything we'd faced.
We're talking about the docuseries, the original docuseries on Netflix, Medal of Honor, now available for on-demand viewing on Netflix. Profiled in the series, our guest on the program, Medal of Honor recipient, Staff Sergeant Clint Romesha. Let's go to that day in October of 2009. First of all, describe Combat Post Keating, because as I'm reading about that I think it was described by the people there as an easy target. Talk about Keating and what the function was of that outpost.
You know, Combat Keating was one of these locations at the time in Afghanistan. The military mindset was we need to establish these little footholds around the country to prevent the enemy's movement. Unfortunately, with the extreme terrain, though, it made it very limited where you could put things. And so it was, of course, a choice between the worst of many choices. So ultimately, Keating got established at the bottom of a valley surrounded by mountains on all four sides. And as you look at military doctrine for defensible positions, it essentially was the absolute opposite of it. But it was also very inspiring to see, you know, that had been my third combat deployment. I had young soldiers, first deployment ever. They got there at that location and they realized, yes, it was less than ideal. It was, you know, the high ground was all around us. It didn't matter where you stood outside, you were an easy target for the enemy. But they didn't gravitate in kind of a pity fest. They really sat there and they embraced the fact that we'd been given a challenging mission, we'd been given a challenging location, and they rose up to that challenge to overcome it with the best attitudes. And I think what we need to remember is we're in an all-volunteer force army right now and military, that these men and women that are raising the right hand, that's those freedoms they give up to go defend this great country. And I got, like I said, just inspired to see these guys embrace such a less than ideal spot that was later deemed indefensible. Well, I got to watch 52 Americans defend the indefensible against 400 Taliban fighters. And at the end of the day, we might have lost some terrain, but we never gave up. We recovered all 8 of our heroes, and we never lost control of that outpost.
I understand that there were small attacks on the outpost up to this point, the morning of October 3rd, 2009. At this point, they basically threw everything at you. When did you realize this was not normal? They were coming with everything they have.
You know, it was the 3 months leading up to that. It was a daily basis, morning, at night. You know, sometimes it would be a couple of shots fired. Sometimes it would be a pretty well-coordinated attack with RPGs and machine gun fire. And in the hindsight of it, we could see that they were testing our reaction time, testing our responses, testing our counterfire, and testing the close air support. And so at 06 in the morning on October 3rd, to initially be woken up with gunfire was not uncommon at all. But as soon as you woke up, you could just sense it in the air, that with the amount of fire that was coming in, you know, the RPGs, the recoilless rifles, the sniper fire, the mortar rounds, you could tell more was coming in than going out. And immediately upon powering the radio up, the defensive positions were calling in overwhelming enemy fire. They were pinned down. No matter how hard they tried to shoot back or as fast as they could try and shoot back, they weren't gaining any initiative back.
Talk about the decision you made to take back the front entrance to the outpost. I mentioned in the beginning in a defensive stature, and then you went to actually sort of a counterattack at that point. Talk about that decision, that shift to try to take this front entrance back.
You know, as the morning went on, I mean, things went from just, I mean, bad to worse, and they were going even worse more quickly. Every minute that was passing by seemed like something else worse was just around the corner. And it came to the point where we essentially were only in control of about 3 buildings. We'd been isolated from about 9 guys. We knew that our wire had been breached, that we had enemy intermixed. And it was one of those senses of, well, if this is going to be kind of our final moments, you know, we still have breath left in our lungs. We can still fight. Let's give it everything we have to the very last. And the idea came with me and my lieutenant. All right, we need to counterattack, because the critical thing is we're not going to be able to keep fighting if we run out of ammo and the enemy had isolated us from our ammo supply point. So it was initially take that, recapture that, feed the rest of the unit ammo. We knew if we didn't get that front gate closed, that they were going to continue to just pour in on us, and we couldn't slow down that effect. So then the next step was to accomplish that. And then finally, the most important part of that three-part mission was making sure we recovered all of our guys. Because for the longest time that day, we had essentially men that we were totally unaccounted for. But after 15 hours, and things working out, we were able to finally have accountability on all 8 of the men we lost that day and re-secure our mortar position and bring guys that were isolated out of there back to kind of the safety of the inner perimeter.
It's interesting, in your book, Red Platoon, A True Story of American Valor, New York Times bestseller, of course, still available, you talk about the training, and I'm assuming that training really kicked in at Keating. You talk about being trained as a cavalry scout, something that you really took to, and you had the knack for react-to-contact drills. Did that kick into play at Keating when you made that decision that, okay, we need to really get aggressive here?
You know, it came to part of the, I don't understand why I made certain decisions that day. Some were very clear and seemed very tactically sound, and then some of the decisions we made, you know, moving without supporting element cover fire is kind of one of those things that it essentially is a suicide mission when you do that, because you have no one watching your flanks. And a lot of the decisions were made were just kind of comes back to that. It just felt like it was the right thing to do. And what you really learn in the military, you know, you can have the best training, you can have the best equipment, and you can have the best plan, but not all that stuff is going to work out every time. But to make a decision is better, whether it's right or wrong, than to make no decision. Because I've seen more often than not an indecisive person that just cannot commit to any sort of decision does more harm than someone that essentially makes a bad decision.
In the book, I got a couple minutes left here in the interview, going by way too quickly. You talk about two things that are never easy. One is rules of engagement when you're forced to be in a reactive role, how difficult that is from a military tactical standpoint as well as a psychological standpoint, and what you did to sort of provoke the enemy along the way, which I loved. But the other is losing a soldier. Talk about that experience of someone that you lose. Is that something that you can ever get over in your mind?
No, it's something that, I mean, will always leave a lasting impression, no matter how long. The thing I've learned, though, and kind of navigated through that process is every time I knew I was going overseas, the potential to lose a life was always very real. So to have that prior mental preparedness to know we're not going over there to sell Girl Scout cookies and ice cream cones. We're going over there to do bad things to bad people. And they're going to try and do the same to us. We might all go over there, but we're all not coming back alive. But we're going to bring everybody back. And then to go through and suffer the loss of a soldier right next to you, I mean, it's a very hard thing to deal with, you know, because that person is never going to be there again in physical form. He's never going to have another Thanksgiving with his family. That's why I think it's so important that we remember the mark they left on our lives when they were in it, that we remember them, that we tell their stories for those that can't, that we continue that forward. Because as long as we remember them, they're never truly gone.
And that's
always going to be here.
And that's something you do every year. Everyone reunites for a golf tournament in their memory and as a fundraiser for them. And the story is told of so many heroic Americans in the Medal of Honor and the Netflix original docuseries, now available for on-demand viewing, of course, on Netflix. Profiled in the series, our guest on the program, Medal of Honor recipient, Staff Sergeant Clint Romache, also author of the book Red Platoon. Clint, thank you so much for being with us on the program today. Thank you, sir.
Oh, very welcome. Thank you for having me, Rick.
You're welcome. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Want to fly somewhere? Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Then call. That's right. Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. Low-cost airlines has all kinds of cheap travel deals. Fly domestically and save up to 75%. You can even fly internationally and save even more. Yes, fly anywhere in the world and save a lot of money on your plane tickets. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. So don't book your tickets until you call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. Call right now for prices so low they can't be published. Travel experts are here 24/7 to help.
Call 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS? Newsflash, the president has changed the tax laws, and now you may be able to pay the IRS less. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, the tax doctor can help you pay the IRS as little as possible allowed by law. There are new tax laws for business owners, the self-employed, even W-2 workers. If you have a back tax problem or a few years of unfilled returns, new help to save you money is now here. Call right now to see how the new tax tax laws can help you. Plus, right now, we'll waive the consultation fee and give you a free tax savings report. Attention business owners, the self-employed, and W-2 workers. Make this free call to the tax doctor now and learn how to take advantage of the new tax laws that may help you pay the IRS less.
800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. That's 800-659-5731.
This is an urgent health notice for all residents suffering from back, neck, knee, and wrist pain. You may qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, but the deadline is fast approaching. Simply call the Health Alert Hotline now.
You heard right. You may qualify for a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace. These items may even be covered by Medicare or your private insurance. The Health Alert Hotline is your brace company. These specialized braces have been tested for pain relief. Call us toll-free right now to determine your eligibility and to learn how to use your private insurance or Medicare to minimize your out-of-pocket cost. Don't wait. If the deadline passes, you may lose your opportunity to get a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace at little or no cost to you.
800-430-9605. 800-430-9605. 800-430-9605. That's 800-430-9605.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, online, thisweekinamerica.us. Dr. David Geyer, orthopedic surgeon, sports medicine specialist, and author of That's Gotta Hurt, providing education and commentary on sports and exercise injury, injury treatments, and prevention for athletes and active people so you can stay healthy and perform your best. His excellent website, drdavidgeyer.com, is a destination to get answers, to get better. Sports medicine simplified at the website. He's back with us on today's program. Dr. Geyer, great to have you back. Always great information. Great to have you with us on the program once again.
Oh, I'm excited to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. We're talking about youth sports and concussions, head injuries, that type of thing. And we focused on football. When you mentioned concussions, you think immediately of football. Let's talk about concussions occurring in sports other than football. And then I want to talk about females. I've read studies where it takes females a little longer to recover. First of all, let's get into concussions in other sports other than football. And you do have an excellent podcast at your website, drdavidgeyer.com, where you talk about PE classes, which is something maybe we overlook in thinking about concussions.
Yeah, I think it's such a great point because the media, rightly or wrongly, really does bring this issue up as it pertains to football, and we hear about them watching football on TV as football fans, but it is very common in other sports. It's not more common. Football is number one in the rates of concussion in any study that you'll ever read, but they're very high in sports like soccer, sports like basketball, lacrosse, wrestling. They certainly can in other sports, and we need to be aware of that and take the same prevention strategies, the same messages that we've talked about before, about letting people know that you're having symptoms, getting it checked out, and not coming back too soon. That's important for soccer, basketball, wrestling, lacrosse, and other sports, just as much as it is for football players.
Information available at the website, drdavidgeyer.com. That's G-E-I-E-R.com. Injuries, recovery, prevention, a wealth of information there. You can go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and log on directly to Dr. Geyer's website. I mentioned about female athletes. Do female athletes take longer to recover?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the more surprising things we've learned about with concussion research over the years is that there's some difference between male and female athletes that we can't really explain. But we know that female athletes that play the same sport, that involves the same rules and same equipment, so this is not like baseball versus softball. I'm talking like soccer. You've got the same rules, the same equipment. Sport like basketball, where the rules are the same, the equipment's the same. In both of those sports and others in that category, the female athletes have higher rates of concussion in terms of overall numbers. They have longer duration, so the concussion lasts longer, and they're more likely to recur. All very worrisome trends for parents of young female athletes.
You'll find more information on that specific topic in a podcast at drdavidgeyer.com. it's interesting, all the rule changes that we've gone through, sports, in all of sports, in football in particular, and techniques as well. And let's talk about that, if we're making significant progress because of that. I'm talking football, soccer has made some changes, certainly changes in techniques in soccer as well as tackling techniques in football. Are we moving in the right direction?
Well, I think we have to do this. I mean, it would be wrong of us to know that some of the things lead to higher rates of concussion and just ignore it. So I think we have to make these rules changes. I think they're generally beneficial. And I know football fans, especially with things like the targeting rules and things like that, have certainly been critical. But I think that when you see that a particular play, a particular, that there's something about a sport that we know leads to increased rates of injuries, and this is true for injuries other than concussions, we've got to do what we can to make the sport safer, because we need the athletes to be able to play longer into their careers, and for our younger athletes, we need them to be able to have healthy lives, be able to go to school with no trouble, and have no ramifications health-wise down the road. So we've got to make changes where we can, but it's going to continue to evolve as we learn more.
I think you've got a podcast that talks about this, and it's an interesting point that you make. We're so focused on concussions. Do we miss other sports injuries that could be, in their own way, just as damaging?
And that, you're absolutely right. And that's been one of the criticisms among the athletes, especially at the NFL level, about some of these rules changes. If we make all these changes to prevent head injuries, which may or may not have, they do have really good intentions, but may or may not be particularly effective, but it changes how athletes play and then potentially leads to more knee injuries and you know, lower body injuries. So maybe you don't have issues with your brain down the road, but now all of a sudden you have bad arthritis when you're 35 or 40 and you're limping and have trouble playing with your kids. So it's a really tricky balance. And you know, again, we need to focus on the health of the athlete, but you're right, we need to focus on the health of the entire athlete and maybe not just the brain.
Couple minutes left in the program. Is there a correlation between an athlete reporting symptoms, in this case I'll talk about concussions, but basically any injury, and returning quicker? If they're able to report it sooner, do they get back on the field quicker?
It is. I would probably phrase it a little differently. We know that the sooner you start the treatment and avoid some of the things that could potentially make it worse, you're going to get better. I think the challenge is if you try to play through ankle injuries, knee injuries, even if it's not structural damage, you risk making it either causing structural damage, or you just cause more pain that takes longer to get better.
You know, it's interesting, in all the years you've been doing this, and it's with your podcast, we get all the latest information that's available to the athletes, to the medical community. Are you amazed sometimes an injury that somebody might have suffered 15, 20 years ago that would have taken them out of competition or out of performing that sport on a recreational level, now they're able to get back in and participate?
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny, in clinic just yesterday, I had a young girl, a high school age female athlete, and her dad was there, and she had torn her ACL, and we were talking about the surgery, and the dad pulls up his pants leg, and he's got this incision that's like a foot long, and we were talking about how it's just not like that anymore. We can do surgeries through much smaller incisions and much less trauma to the body, and then the recovery and rehab with physical therapy is light years ahead of where it used to be. So yes, you still have long recoveries, and these are big challenges, but we're so much further along than we were 20 and 30 years ago.
Dr. David Guyer has been our guest on the program. You'll find all this information and much, much more at the website, drdavidguyer.com, G-E-I-E-R.com. You can look on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And information as well on Dr. Guyer's book, That's Gotta Hurt, The Injuries That Change Sports Forever. Number of programs with Dr. Guyer, you will find them going to our website. Go to the podcast and you'll pull up those programs, and you can get, again, further information at Dr. David Guyer's website. Doctor, it's a pleasure. Look forward to having you back on the program. Thank you for sharing all this information with us again.
Oh, always glad to do it. I love your show, and thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for sharing all the information. You'll find, once again, all the information at Dr. Guyer's website, drdavidguyer.com, and link on by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us.
You've been listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton, and join us next time for another broadcast of This Week in America.